Hi, you're listening to Secrets for an Inspirational Life with me, your host, Mimi Novick. I'm so happy and thrilled to have you here with me. I have created this series for all of us so we can change our world together and live a more holistic and balanced life. Together, we will share lots of inspiring stories from all walks of life, speak with leading experts, enjoy healthy living ideas, explore music and subjects that inspire each other to always have hope. Thank you so much for listening. I really appreciate all of you. Hello everyone and welcome to another episode of Secrets for an Inspirational Life. How are you all today? How are things in life? You know, I always ask this question, and it's so important, I think, to ask a question to somebody and actually to wait for the answer. Because in these days, everything is so rushed and so hurried, and sometimes when people ask you, how are you? It's sort of a little bit like hello and goodbye and nothing in between. It really does make a difference when we actually give time to somebody because it makes them feel worthy. And that's something I think that these days, not a lot of people are feeling their worth. Me included, I have to say in that, I have moments where one can doubt oneself and their place in the world. And it's so important that we find our worth. We have it within ourselves. I suppose it's about rediscovering that worth. And once we have that absolute belief in our own worth, is only when we can respect the worth of other people. Now, I am delighted to welcome my guest today, who is all the way from the United States, and that is the very interesting Becky Aste. Becky is a trauma-informed marriage coach and the host of the podcast Your Breakthrough Blueprint. She is the CEO of I Do Breakthrough, a company dedicated to equipping wives to repair their connections in their marriage by moving trauma out of the body. After spending many years researching and going through every mainstream modality of healing to save her own marriage, she found herself, 2 children later, separated from her husband. At the final hour, she stumbled upon the unconventional game changer of somatic work that took her marriage from dying to thriving in less than a year. Becky says that whether it's betrayal, addiction, abandonment, abuse, neglect, grief, or something else we've survived, our body keeps the score and can become an unconscious emotional block to all the connections we share in our lives. And that is Becky's job, to unblock. Today, she shares her amazing story. Welcome, dear Becky.
Mimi, thank you so much. Oh my gosh, if I could just tell you what happened on like an energetic level to my nervous system, just hearing your voice, I'm like, her voice is so soothing. So,
oh,
thank you.
Thank you, Becky. Thank you so much. And thank you for coming. It's an absolute pleasure to have you here.
Thank you for having me. Feels like I'm back in London. Haven't been in there since 2010.
Oh, really? And how did you find London?
My husband has an aunt who lives in London. And when we were dating in college, She and her husband invited us over and took care of, if we got our, you know, travel taken care of, she paid for everything when we were there. So we were given the whole London experience, all the touristy stuff, the mulled wine, the yummy spots to eat. It was awesome.
Oh, sounds wonderful. Are you going to come again?
I want to so bad. We've talked to her about it, and especially recently, she recently lost her husband. So we've been talking about getting over there for a visit.
You must. Welcome to London. I'm going to send it out there for you so that the invitation, and then you know what they say, when you send it out into the universe, it will trickle to you and it will bring you to London.
I receive that. Thank you, Mimi.
You're welcome, Becky. And I have to say to the listeners out there that Becky does so many amazing and wonderful things and so much healing work that is so needed, so needed. And I say this to my guests always, that whatever they bring to this moment in time that we all share together, it is deeply healing for all of us, because there is a connection that goes far beyond the physical, somehow on some beautiful level through the soul. We have a connection, and there is a reason for everything that happens, especially to have the wonderful Becky here tonight.
Agreed. Well said. Thank you again for having me.
Oh, now, Becky, you are a trauma-informed marriage coach, but I do know that you deal with somatic healing and lots of other trauma types of, how can I say, I suppose, therapies in a way. It's a therapy as a whole, as opposed to just one aspect. I know you're an expert in a particular field, but trauma is a huge thing. But before we go into that, to take it right back, how did you get into this work?
Oh man, it's not because my marriage has been shiny and squeaky clean. What, you know, ended up leading to this position as a marriage coach was big ruptures. We married young. I was 21 years old. Pretty early on, I saw a toxic dance that at the time, the only words I had for it was chase and run, where I felt like when we were good, we were good. But when we weren't, I was chasing my husband down and he was running. And then later, as we, you know, got into self-development, we're trying to find healing, I had different words for, you know, the experience I was having in my marriage, like anxious attachment style. That was me, just this like deep fear of abandonment and needing him to be okay with me, to feel okay. And then him, on the other hand, the avoidant attachment style. If anyone has heard of attachment theory, these are just different terms for kind of how we relate to another. And so he was very much more avoidant and would need space, and you know, his idea of resolving a conflict was to go away, and mine was, I need to be close and talk it out. So it was just like, okay, this is picking up speed. And then we had codependency and addiction at play, where I was the codependent one and he was just trying to numb his own pain and deal with his own pain with his own cocktail of addictions. And so all of this reached its head year 10, two kids later. Broken vows, broken trust, betrayal, and we were separated. We were talking about divorce. I was, you know, talking with my friends about it. I was putting away money for myself. God forbid things got, you know, sketchy financially between us. And that's when I was at my rock bottom. That's when I stumbled upon a coach who was the first introduction for me into what's called somatic work, which is just work with the body under the premise of our body keeps the score of the trauma we've gone through. So in order to heal, we have to go into the body to move trauma out. And up until that point, I'd tried everything under the sun to my like conscious awareness to heal me, to heal us. And I now realize why it wasn't working, why I felt so stuck for so long, why we were spinning our wheels and then getting worse, was I was only working from the neck up. I was in traditional talk therapy. I was reading books, online articles. I was, you know, listening to podcasts, learning, listening, verbalizing, like all of it was from the neck up, and I was completely ignoring my body. So I had a lot of knowledge about how marriage should work and how to communicate and, you know, words for my experience. But as I'm sure we'll get into in the conversation, my body took over time and time again and was betraying me in a way and leading to further disconnection until I figured that piece out. And so now, you know, a spoiler alert, we ended up healing and thriving now. And my husband is a coach in the program that I created, and he runs a men's track, and we're just both in awe of what God has restored in our life and marriage.
Wow. My goodness. It's incredible, really, that I have to say, trauma is something. Let's look at it on a global scale for a moment. Trauma is something that a lot of people have gone through. Some things are wars, accidents. Personally, anything can happen to a human being. And we don't realize, I suppose, actually, how much trauma that we can go through emotionally as well. And people don't recognize it. And they think at the time, well, it's something that I've lived through and something that I've got to get over. But there's lasting effects of everything in our life, isn't it? That there's repercussions to the experiences, good or bad, that we go through. Now, what made you? I know you listen to a lot of podcasts. I know you listen to a lot of things, read a lot of things. But at what point did you decide that you needed help? What was that moment, that epiphany moment, when you thought, actually, there's something wrong and I need help with this?
Honestly, very early on, like to a fault. I think me and my husband were great examples of opposite extremes in this way. I was so dependent on others. I had so little, non-existent trust in myself, in my intuition. People would say things like, trust your gut. I'm like, what are you talking about? I don't know how to do that. Sounds nice. And so I was constantly looking for outside opinions to, you know, either validate or guide me. So honestly, from the time we were dating, we had like mentors in our church, just older couples who in my eyes were doing marriage right. And so I'd always be trying to set up time with them and get advice from them. And then Sebastian was way more independent, and we got annoyed by each other in that way. He's like, you're always, you know, seeking advice from people. Like, can't you just make a decision on your own? And then I'm over here judging him. Like, you're so isolated. Like, why don't you accept help from other people? It's a noble thing. So I think both of us were just on two extremes of that spectrum.
But what this, the point I'm trying to make, I suppose, is that you listen to people, whether it be friends or family or colleagues or your neighbor, whoever it is, and you hear about marital problems, you hear about family problems, and in a way, people end up chasing their tail round and round and round and round, and it becomes a vicious cycle. You realize there's a problem, but you don't know how to get out of that problem. And sometimes people don't want to get out of the problem because it's just learned and it's a habit. But what made you want to change your life?
I think if I could point it to what people say, the proverbial, you know, rock bottom, where I was finally ready to like, not even just, yeah, mask with all of these different healing modalities, because a lot of that in retrospect was me putting on this, you know, mask. It was helping me feel safe, kind of running in this frenzied energy of getting help from all over the world. But when I hit this point of like, okay, now I'm ready to radically heal me and look at me on a level that I wasn't ready for before. It's not just, I want to fix the marriage. It's like, God, even if the marriage isn't healed, like I just need help because my nervous system is on fire. I feel like I'm on the brink of a mental breakdown, all of that. So that rock bottom for me was when my husband and I were separated. It was when he had moved out. He was living at his mom's. I was at home with the kids and I was home alone for the first time, you know, in our marriage, not just him going overnight, right? But it's like, whoa, he's not in the house anymore. And I don't know if this is the beginning of forever. Like this could be the new norm. Like, I don't know if he's ever moving back in or if this is just going to be a kind of a trial thing. And it was just the deepest loneliness I'd ever felt in my life. And it resurfaced this old wound of losing my dad at a very early age. I was 18 years old. He died suddenly of a heart attack. And so that was one of my first big traumas in life where I was a daddy's girl. And then all of a sudden his presence was poof, gone. His voice was gone. I couldn't hug him. I couldn't touch him. I couldn't see him, just without warning, gone. And that's exactly how it felt in that moment where my husband had moved out. I was alone in the house. The kids had gone to bed. And it was that old abandonment wound surfaced. Uh-huh. It was this gaping just hole in my heart. And so that's when I was like, I just need help. And I'm ready for like a total whatever I need to do for me, no matter the outcome, because I'm not okay right now.
It's an interesting fact, I think, that there are so many things that we go through as human beings. And it's a difficult life. This is not an easy life. Some people have it worse and some people better, but nobody really goes through life that nothing touches them or affects them. And especially trauma such as losing a parent. And do you think that that unresolved trauma led to this codependency with your husband?
I do. My dad, you know, he died the first week of college, and my first male friend was my husband, Sebastian. And so he reminded me of my dad a lot. Like there was just, there's a man all of a sudden in my life when my dad is gone, and I became attached to him. I became dependent on him, and that's not all bad. It's just, at the time, it was a gift. Like it honestly helped me survive. But because that was the foundation we built our relationship on, it did get to a place where, you know, left unchecked and just not having the tools to know how to be in my own power and energy and meet my own needs, that got pretty unhealthy and toxic, me being that codependent with him.
And it took for you to hit rock bottom emotionally, like it does for a lot of people. You get to a point where you simply, I think it's a feeling, you know, inside of oneself where you can't cope anymore and there's no other way out, only to go back up again. Because once you've hit rock bottom, I think in a way that is the best place to be in order to heal again.
Yeah, and no, totally there. Yeah, exactly.
And I suppose it's welcoming into your life somehow a higher power that I suppose a divine grace that you feel that you can be, in effect, rescued from this situation. Would you say that that is something that happened in your life?
Yeah, that's a really interesting question. I haven't been asked that before, because even that word rescue, like I think of me, I grew up with a father figure that was, he wasn't perfect, but he was stable. He was a protector. Like we had we did have a deep bond. And so he was the one to quote unquote rescue me since childhood. And then all of a sudden that figure was out of my life. And so I think I was searching for that from the moment he left this earth. And I found that pretty quick in Sebastian. I remember just thinking mostly on a subconscious level, like, wow, knight in shining armor. Like he stepped into my life at this time and is like, you know, whisking me away, helping all of this feel better, this awful situation. And so I find that's really common with a lot of my clients is just that I call it savior syndrome. We're looking for someone to come save us because of the trauma we've been through from often many of us in early age. And so we look for it in men, we look for it in career, we look for it in even therapy and, you know, good things. It doesn't all have to be toxic coping mechanisms, but we're looking to be saved from this discomfort, from this, you know, existential crisis of being human, from, like you said, just this life being hard and the challenges and the trauma. And so it's interesting because I feel like what landed in my lap at that time did save me, but it was the first thing that wasn't an external person or, you know, program necessarily. It was, yeah, a program that I did, but it was pointing me back to me for the first time in my life on a level that I had never experienced. It wasn't somebody else's advice, somebody else's idea, somebody else's quotes, somebody else's. It was just with somatic work that I learned. She was teaching me to trust the wisdom of my own body, to learn how to find resources within my own self, my own body, my own nervous system, and really teach me how to save myself.
This is actually, I think, the key to everything, because there are no answers that lie outside of us. It's really all within us. And it's that unlocking of the depth of our soul and who we are. There lies the key to our life. And people out there can help, you know, for example, you in your work. But ultimately, you're shining the light to help people. But it is each and every one of us who ultimately has to make that journey on their own to reach something deep within themselves, isn't it?
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. We're very much a society. It's information overload, right? An advice-giving society, which is great. I just think we've swung to an extreme and we've gotten really disembodied, disconnected from self, just this severed sense of connection with our own intuition. And that's where so much of the power is, not to say we swing to that side now and just only trust ourselves and pull ourselves up by our bootstraps and no one else is trustworthy. But it's just like the beautiful harmony. Where can we find the balance in the middle where we trust ourselves so deeply, but also how amazing that we have support along the way and guides that can, you know, that we resonate with and that can ultimately point us back to ourselves at the end of the day.
And it's important, I think, to trust yourself enough to be able to have that courage to embark upon this journey of healing, because it is a very difficult journey, but it has to be done. It's something that you know is going to be traumatic and difficult, but you know that at the end of the day, you are going to reach a place that will be more peaceful than where you're at now. But how do you encourage, for example, your clients, Becky, to have the courage to take that journey? Because it is a very frightening thing for a lot of people to do.
Honestly, what I think, I mean, I'm just even thinking about them and what they've said, because every single woman that passes through these doors to work with me, I just honor their courage. I tell every single one of them, this is not for the faint of heart. This is so unbelievably courageous that you would take this trust fall into yourself, especially just considering what you've been through and how much you've already tried and how much has already failed. Like, everyone that comes to me, it's kind of their last stop shop. It's like, we've done all the things, mainstream modalities of healing, and nothing has worked. Like, what's going to make this different? But I kind of hope it does. And for some reason, this is resonating, and I want this to be, you know, my last try. So just honoring their courage is one. And then just sharing, like, me too. You know, the women that I work with is like, that's exactly my story, that I had tried everything. I was down to an eighth of a thread of hope. And I was very skeptical that anything would work because my nervous system had proven time and time again, like, you try something and then it fails. You try something and then it fails. So what makes this different? And it was, you know, I gave you the spoiler alert, but I think just letting them know they're not alone. And then they get into the group. Like, I run a group coaching program, and it's so cool because it's rolling enrollment. So we have like seasoned clients who have been through the program and are just like on their last leg. And the newbies are able to see, like, oh, look where you're at. And you started where I am. And it just gives them actual, tangible, in your face hope that there are women like me feeling exactly what I'm feeling right now. And look, they didn't die through this work. They're actually crying.
How describe a session, Becky, if someone was to come to you, for example, on a one-to-one?
Mm-hmm.
How would you do it? Because you have a program. So tell us a little bit about that as well.
Yeah, it's there's a variety. Like, I just, between, you know, the tool belt that I have of just getting to coach people somatically, but then also my intuition, it's never the exact same session, right? Every session, it could go many different ways. But I love that question because a lot of people are like, yeah, what does this kind of work look like? Like, give me, I'm a visual person. So just describe, like, I have my clients, because our live coaching calls are on Friday afternoons. And so a couple days before, I have them submit their question for coaching so that, you know, I have time to prepare and that those that are hopping on the call know if it's a call that they want to be on. For example, if it's something like, let's say, childhood sexual trauma that someone's asking about, some other client might think, oh, that's going to be triggering for me, I'm going to pass on this call, you know, and go to the next one. So just a way to give everyone the heads up. And then when we're on a call and I'm coaching someone, the first thing that I'm doing is tracking their nervous system and trying to see, you know, what kind of state is their nervous system in. Are they in a fight response, flight, freeze, fawn, or flop? Those are the five F words. And most people have heard of fight or flight, you know, but we could even add a sixth and call it frolic. I heard another colleague of mine, somatic practitioner, say the frolic state is the positive state. That's where we want to be in. But a lot of us can forget about that and just focus on the negative states. It's not all about that. So anyway, I'm tracking their nervous system, helping them to identify and using it as a teaching, coaching opportunity to identify themselves, like what state they're in, starting the call. So it's educating them and teaching them nervous system, you know, terminology and being able to be self-aware. And then just asking them to share their question, or I'll reiterate it. And then we'll go from there. One of the first questions that I always ask, let's say the question is, I am ruminating like crazy on thoughts of, you know, my husband cheating on me. That's a common one. We have a lot of women in the program who have been through betrayal trauma. And so let's say the question is that there's just constant ruminating thoughts. I'm going to ask her, where do you feel that in your body? And new clients sometimes look at me like a deer in headlights, like, I don't know. Yeah. You know?
Yeah.
That's okay. That's part of the practice, is just starting to like tune into your body. And if they don't know, that's fine. We try again next week. It's just starting to familiarize that actually the emotional trauma that we've been through does get stuck and recorded. And like the book says, the body keeps the score of what we've been through. So helping them identify. And then from there, maybe asking like, Okay, what thoughts are going through your head? And just stopping there for a moment so that they can identify the stories, the thoughts, the questions running through their mind. What emotions are you experiencing? That's maybe the fear, the anxiety, the stress. And then helping them figure out what their core need is where the power really comes into play and where they can step back into power. Because once they really know just what do I need right now, then we can start to get to work and lay out a roadmap of, okay, how can we get that need met in a way that doesn't harm you or others or your marriage, in a way that's healthy, in a way that aligns with your, you know, ultimate core values and how you want to live your life. And so that's when we get into different coaching of if she needs help regulating her nervous system, I can bring up different tools. For example, just based on what she's experiencing, I might pull out a grounding tool as simple as the five senses. So if she's all up in her head and triggered and, you know, thoughts spiraling, I'll just ask her to name five things she sees, four things she can hear, three things she can touch, two things she can smell, one thing she can taste. And that can bring you out of, you know, this flight response, this just constant buzzing, ungrounded energy back into your body, out of your mind, back into your body. Other times, let's say it's anger. I mean, I've had women that I've just coached and guided to somatically express that when anger is something that we repress a lot of the time. And so if she feels comfortable, I'll be like, okay, go camera off, go into your bedroom and scream into a pillow, punch a mattress, like whatever you need to do if the kids aren't home right now. If they are, save it for when you have 5 minutes, right, of silence. A lot of my clients who are moms, who feel like they never get a break from their kids, the car is their best time to release anger, like just straight out sacred rage session in their car, just screaming their lungs out. And so it's attuning to the body and then really following the body's lead of what the body wants to do. So I could give a lot of other examples, but I hope those are two good tangibles.
So really, thank you for that, Becky. It's very interesting. It is a holistic approach.
Mm-hmm.
It's something that not only that you're dealing with on a emotional and mental level, but you're also dealing with it with the central nervous system on a physical level. And do you think that that is actually the answer, is that we have to heal completely as a whole?
Yeah,
as opposed to bits and bobs, and then those bits and bobs don't gel, because unless we actually heal as a whole, I don't think it's possible to actually heal at all. Do you?
No, I'm tracking with you. I agree. And if I can geek out for a moment, this is something that I could leave your listeners with, that if they don't remember a single thing I say this entire episode, this is what I would love for them to remember, of why it's important to take the whole body into account and not just from the neck up when you're trying to heal, whatever it is. So we all have what's called a vagus nerve. It runs from the base of our skull to the bottom of our spine. And it's, you can think of it like the superhighway of information, where chemical messages are constantly being sent from our brain to our body, body to our brain. And only 20% of those messages go from our brain to our body. But 80% of those messages go from our body to our brain. So all of that meaning, you know, the mainstream modalities of healing that have dominated the past couple of generations have been the traditional neck up, just talking things through and, you know, listening, reading, auditory, visual, you know, a lot of good stuff, brain rewiring, affirmations, meditations. None of that, none of it is bad or wrong or dumb or anything negative, but it's only working with the 20%. So you have all of these women and men who are giving their gosh darndest effort, like tapping into everything they can and wondering, why do I feel like a salmon swimming upstream right now? And so that's when somatic work comes into play, where it's like, oh, let's learn to work with the 80% and leverage the entire body and nervous system where your trauma is stuck and stored anyway, because now you're working with the current, you know, you're working with the flow of messages that if you can get your body to do something, it's going to send those messages to your brain and you're going to start to see results in a way that isn't as efforted as just trying to, you know, work with things from the neck up.
And the vague, you know what, funnily enough, of course, I really don't believe that anything's a coincidence, but I was going to ask you about the vagus nerve, because I know this is something that not a lot of people know about, and yet it's such an important point to heal the vagus nerve. And so many different things that can happen in the body that sort of tilt the equilibrium are actually all because of quite possibly an inflammation in the vagus nerve.
Yeah, the vagus nerve is really important to tune into, and it's exciting. I love that you're already like thinking about this and wanting to bring it up, because I'm seeing it become more talked about, more mainstream, more just awareness is growing, and it excites me so much. But like tending to and doing different things to just basically nourish and strengthen that vagus nerve. It's the second largest nerve in our whole body next to our spinal cord. And different things you can do for that is one is saying VU, like it sounds like this. I'm going to sound crazy to some people, but this stimulates the vagus nerve and helps activate and soothe it. If you just go VU, it like touches that part of the nerve and activates and stimulates. So that's one thing you can do to try to calm. You can put ice on the back of your neck where it starts on the base of your spine. I mean, you could Google ways to nourish and soothe the vagus nerve, and there's a whole bunch of different things you can try.
It's an important and absolutely important point. And I know that in Chinese medicine, it's one of the points where if people are disturbed in any sort of way, whether that be emotionally or physically or spiritually, one of the first things that I learned from somebody who was an expert in this field, I don't know whether you've heard of this, Becky, is to put a metal at the base of the neck. And that point actually is a huge energetic point. And sometimes it can be overstimulated, that you need to close it off. And I can imagine in traumatic experiences and trauma that happens in our lives, that you get to a point where there's this on-off within our bodies. The right thing comes on and then it goes off and on and off and on and off. And there's no real rhythm in it. So it's like listening to loads of different radio stations. And I've heard of this balancing of the vagus nerve. So I'm really interested in that. And also the fact that I love what you do, in that you work with people as a whole, not just in talking, but do you address these points, that the body actually does hold the memory? And that's what I wanted to ask you about somatic healing, to talk a little bit about that and what it actually means and how you involve it in your work.
Yeah. And first of all, I haven't heard of the metal, but that makes sense, because metal's a conductor. You think of like,
yes,
for the TV back when we had antennas.
Yes.
For TV. And it can pick up, you know, frequencies and electromagnetic fields. And so, yeah, I'm like, where can I find some metal in my house? I want to go put that at the base of my skull.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, 50 P's. You must have known about 50 P's in the UK. They are a certain shape. I can't now remember how many 50p's I've seen, but they're a certain shape. But I know a friend of mine who works with therapy always says, have a 50p ready for when you're feeling stressed and put it at the back of your neck.
Oh, and like a frozen bag of peas?
Yeah. And it's nice. So interesting because we had all these 50p's and then we'd be putting it at back of the neck. And actually, people would laugh, but it really does work. It's an immediate grounding.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, ice can be a huge grounding technique that people go to. I'm a baby for the cold, so I usually don't go for that. But like ice baths and cold showers, for some people, that's very nourishing for their nervous system. Yeah. But it's good once you get into somatic healing to even note that, hey, just because it's good for one person doesn't mean it's good for all nervous systems. We're unique, right? We all have our unique blueprint. So it's kind of like shopping, trying on what fits, letting go of what doesn't, and then keeping what really soothes you. So as far as...
Back to the somatic healing. Sorry to interrupt you. What is it for people out there?
Yeah, so the best way to summarize it is our body does keep the score and traps the lived experiences that we've experienced. So for example, just even this week, a client, and this is a trigger warning, she was assaulted, you know, sexually years and years and years ago. I think it was 15 years ago. And someone in her physical, like fitness class, spin class, made a comment. I think the instructor made a comment that really wasn't trauma informed or sensitive. And she was just trying to be funny, but it took that client of mine right back to the incident of 15 years ago, as if she was experiencing it again in that moment, even though all this time has passed and she's done a lot of healing from the neck up. She just started in my program last week, so she's just getting into the somatic work now. But she had pain in her body in the places where she was harmed 15 years ago. And she's like, is that even possible? Like, I felt actual physical pain in different parts of my body and my heart rate picked up and I started to feel panic like I did years and years ago. And so you see the same with, you know, war veterans, like the 4th of July in America, that's when we do all the fireworks go off. It's Independence Day. That is the worst day of the year for many veterans who have been in active combat because sounds like gunshots, and it brings them right back to that experience, even if it was decades ago, as if it was happening again right now. So the body is very wise, and we might be tempted to think like, ugh, like why would we have these bodies or whatever you believe as far as like intelligent design or God? Why would God give us these bodies that do that to us? Where it's actually it's a gift. It can seem like a curse, but it is a gift and it's needed for our survival, for our nervous system and body to remember things and encode them so that it's protecting us from future pain. You know, if we didn't have that scanning, if we didn't have our nervous system scanning for pain, then we'd walk in the middle of the road and get hit by a car, you know, without any sense of danger. And so the problem is when we've been through so much trauma that our nervous system has been turned so on, and there's so much memory in the body of all of the pain that we've gone through and it hasn't been resolved or moved out, then we're on constant high alert. It's like an alarm system that has off and it just keeps sounding the alarm even when there's no danger. And so somatic work is learning how to reset the circuit and get your nervous system back to a place of homeostasis, clear out, resolve, and complete anything that is incomplete or stuck in the body so that you can tell the difference again between real danger and perceived danger. So one tangible example of that, there's a client who had, you know, kind of a big T trauma. happen at church one time. There was a cross, one of those like giant church crosses that hang on the wall, and it actually fell and hit a member of the church, and she was like the only one there, and she saw it happen, and she was responsible for helping this woman who, I don't know how bad the condition was, but as she was bringing this up on a call, like her whole body was back in a trauma response. And we went back and we titrated, which is just a word for, you know, remembering what was going on, but then coming out of that so that you don't get stuck. So she was telling me what was happening and what her body was feeling and the thoughts going through her head. And then all of a sudden I would have her notice something in the room that felt safe. Like, hey, find something that's aesthetically, you know, appealing or pleasing to the eye right now. Can you tell me that right now? And then can you find a spot in your body that doesn't feel tense or tight? Is there anywhere in the body that actually feels, you know, loose? And she, for some people, like the only spot they can find is an earlobe sometimes, right? Like, well, that's not tense because there's no muscle. But it's finding, it's kind of pendulating between the trauma and, hey, there's also good and safety that we can find too in this moment. So it's like going back and forth with her. And then I invited her to close her eyes. I don't always do this for every client, but I invited her to do that. And I asked her, if you could have done anything in that moment and there would be no consequences, there would be nobody mad at you, there would be nothing bad that would happen, like, what do you want to do? And she was like, run. I want to run so fast and so far away. And I wanted to get out of there. And so I was like, okay, can we do that? Can we imagine that? Can we visualize that? And so what I was doing there is helping her express something that she wasn't able to express in the moment. The reason that that trauma got trapped in her body is because her body wanted to do something in that moment. It wanted to get the hell out of there. And yet she didn't, because what you're supposed to do is like, I'm the only one that can help this woman right now. So, you know, it's probably good, right? It's good that she stayed and helped that woman, but that was completely against what her nervous system was asking for. So the way that she ended up working through that and resolving that trauma was imagining it in detail, feeling it, visualizing it, you know. And I encouraged her, hey, if this doesn't feel enough by the end of the call, which it did, I said, you can go literally to a field, like a wide open field, go somewhere where you can literally run, like go back to that experience and just run out and allow your body to somatically express what it couldn't do in that moment. And she said for the first time after that, she was able to walk back into that church without anxiety, without panic. She had a huge victory follow up this week on it, where they put a new cross up it was like smaller and not as heavy and all of that. And she actually went up and was able to touch it and express her concerns to another member of the church who validated it. And so she's just like, yeah, I'm feeling so much more healed in this area. So that's just one tangible example.
So really, we have to, as human beings, recognize this is the most important thing. I think we're so far out there somewhere that we don't actually allow ourselves to feel this. I suppose we run away from feelings in order to cope with them. But in reality, that then shows up in different aspects of pain, discomfort in the body. So in reality, we have to face our fears. I don't think there's any other way really of healing through that, unless we face whatever it is, like your client, that we're running away from. But that's not so easy.
It's not. It's not easy at all. And we can't face them, right, too prematurely either, because...
Absolutely, yes.
Yeah, for some people, trying to open that can of worms or talk about something or, you know, process something too soon is more harmful than helpful. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Interesting how even a lot of people have no memory of their childhood, I find. Childhood was very traumatic. Yeah. So the body has just completely put that out of conscious memory. The word for that is dissociation. And it really is, again, like the wisdom of the nervous system protecting us, something that we went through that was too painful. Or it's not always like a big T trauma. It can be something like perpetual or chronic neglect as a child, something more subtle as well that we need to block out because feeling it all is just too much. It's going to overwhelm the nervous system's capacity to process. So it's doing it in dipping your toe in the pool, you know, not diving right in, belly flopping.
But how, for example, if a client was to come to you, Becky, and say to you, because you took your marriage, as you said in your own words, from dying to now having a successful marriage, but there is no magic fix there, is there? It's not a case of, what if that other partner doesn't want to continue? What does the partner that's left and that has been abandoned or hurt or has had betrayal, do you deal with instances like that as well? How do they cope?
Yeah, absolutely. So in our container, we celebrate both outcomes. You know, women, most of them come in, like maybe 98%, wanting to save their marriage. Mm-hmm. And some do. Some find after all of the things that they've tried, somatic work is the only thing that opened the door to restore the intimacy, the trust, the, you know, repair the trauma that had happened within the marriage. And that's beautiful. And we celebrate it. And it's, you know, interesting just to see how many men who start out resistant and not on board and, you know, just shaking their head and rolling their eyes at what their women are starting to get into. And then once they see the changes on this level, catching on and wanting a taste of that. But other times it either has a repelling effect. You know, I've seen spouses see their women get so healed and in their power and in this energy of just total anchored, aligned, authentic voice and being, and it threatens them. You know, for them, it's like to their nervous system, hey, who is this? This is not familiar. This is new. And our nervous systems don't like new. We like comfort zone. So what I tell every single client is, look, when you heal on this level, you're either going to call your husband up or you're going to call him out. But either way, you heal and either way, you win. You've got two best case scenarios that can happen here. One, you heal deeply on the most subconscious, cellular, spiritual level you've ever experienced, and your husband wants a taste of that. Or two, you heal on the most subconscious, cellular, spiritual level that you've ever experienced, and you stop abandoning yourself. You know, at the end of the day, we can't force our partners to do anything, but this has been the best optimal way that I've seen to open the door and the invitation to give the marriage a shot and your husband an opportunity to feel safe enough to come towards you.
That's a good point, because I know that sometimes when people go through therapy and they go through the healing process, they no longer want that life anymore. They no longer want that partner anymore. And that's why I was curious with your work, is what happens when actually they don't want it anymore? Is that a result, I suppose, that's okay? You know, sometimes they come for guidance with marriage or their life, but they walk away from their life and people feel guilty about that. But we shouldn't feel guilty about the healing process, because sometimes we're just not with the right people. What do you think about that, Biggie?
I think it's very collective. There's some women who are like, hey, what if I am not sure if I want to save my marriage? And I'm like, that's great. Like, they just come in and they just want healing for themselves. Amazing. Others can't even fathom or like can't even entertain the possibility or idea of that. Those were the women like me. I was terrified. I couldn't even imagine how I could survive if my marriage didn't survive. And what I found and what so many women that were more like on that side like me have found through this work is they get to a place where, oh my God, like I actually for the first time know, not just in my head, but in my body, I feel and know on a cellular level that no matter what happens in this marriage, I'm going to be okay because I've got myself. And I know how to not abandon myself anymore. And I know that I'm safe within me. And so I remember getting to that point, and that was what, you know, drew my husband's curiosity again, like, wow, for the first time, Becky doesn't need me. She doesn't need these conversations to go a certain way. She's really got herself. This is an energy I've never experienced from her before. And so, what I find is a lot of the guilt that you mentioned can just be society's conditioning. You know, there's a deep, deep conditioning, whether it's from your family or, you know, community or spiritual upbringing, that divorce is bad and somehow says something about you as a human, or like you're a failure, or that there's something about your worth, right? That's in question. And so that's hard conditioning to come out of, but it's amazing to see women who get to that place of like, oh my gosh, I can't believe I have the peace where, yes, I'm grieving, but I know the best thing for me right now is to step away. And I know and feel in complete alignment about that. And my family is going to feel a certain way. I'm sure people are going to question, but they're in this space, right, of all of these women that are just so unbelievably supportive. And that's what I say I love about this, you know, group program setting, is it's the magic healing balm. You have this group of humans who are just radically self-accepting and other accepting and not trying to shame or judge you, and just really honoring, hey, what we talked about at the beginning of this conversation, this is so unbelievably courageous. And there's dignity in what you're doing, whatever decision you make at the end of the day.
It is courageous, isn't it, to be able to, firstly, I suppose, admit to yourself that there is an issue. And I wonder how much of it is that you cannot continue. It becomes too uncomfortable. And you have to make a change. I wonder whether that is like a lot of things in life. You have to become uncomfortable. You have to make that decision on that crossroads, is whether you live this life of unhappiness and being uncomfortable, and do you really want to change your life? How many people that come to you, Becky, really do want to change? Do you think all of them want to change? Or do you think it's only a certain amount of people that actually really want to heal from whatever they're going through?
I think all of us want to feel better. I don't think all of us want to change.
Yeah, true.
So what I tell my clients is like, this journey is like a mirror. You're going to get out of it what you put in. And there are some that take it like that, and they go all in, and they it's just amazing. It's complete courage, it's complete surrender. It's, you know, not that there's no fear with it, but it's, hey, I'm doing this and I'm going all in. And I see them get that return, right, reflected right back to them. And then there's others that just aren't ready. And it doesn't mean they won't get to that point, but this is just not the time. This is just, it's too scary. It's, their nervous system isn't ready. They're still in survival mode. And so I tell women, like, do not feel like a failure if this feels like nothing but resistance right now and feels too hard, because what you're learning right now are tools that you can have sitting latent in your mind bank and in your subconscious and in your body, that when you do, you know, feel ready, this can be awakened and turned on at any time. So yeah, I mean, we're just humans. And so I see all sorts of different journeys in the containers that I work in.
It's an fascinating subject, and one that really I don't think a lot of therapists out there consider, because a lot of people, when they go to therapy, for example, it is all about talking, and there is a place for that. Of course, there is a place. But more and more now, I think the realization is dawning upon people that you have to look at these things as a whole, because it's impossible otherwise, especially when you talk about the nervous system and things such as the vagus nerves. These sort of things are just really, especially the vagus nerve, is something I think that it has been known about, but not really to the extent that it's gaining attraction, I suppose. That's the only way that I can say it, as it has been in recent times.
Mm-hmm. I completely agree. I wonder how much of that is the pandemic. I just, you know, the pandemic was such a catalyst for so many that whatever was bubbling under the surface, I mean, it just got brought to the surface in our faces. Yeah. So mental health, I just saw, became so normalized, you know, almost to a point where it was like trendy, you know, those words, nervous system regulation. And some people get annoyed with that, like that it's become so trendy. I'm like, hey, better trendy than not talked about. Like this is important.
Yeah.
And I see awareness growing. And Bessel van der Kolk's book, The Body Keeps the Score, has been a profound influence on this work, and it's spreading. And as much as social media has its downfalls, that has helped it spread too.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. There's something happened globally, on a global scale, to, you know, to all of us, that was a catalyst for change. And I think every single person on the planet went through and is still going through that, I call it the catalytic converter, like in a car, that you have to change. You have to go along with that energy that is continuing now. It's a huge time of transformation. And especially this work that you do, in that relationships are so important. And if you have a good and stable relationship with a partner, it's something that is a fantastic base for life in general. And the isolation that people felt during these past years all the more so shows us the need for connection, isn't it?
I love that. The isolation we've collectively felt over these past years has only highlighted our need for connection. It's so true. It's so, so true. At first, when the world shut down, I went from like working in person to working at home, and the introverted part of me loved it. But then it reached a point where I was like, I miss humans so much. I need humans. And now it feels so special. Like, you know, it was something I took for granted before. And now I'm like, okay, I'm hugging you in real life.
I understand you, Becky. I have a neighbor and they're down the road, and I'm not particularly friendly with them. But even after everything that happened, I thought, oh, I miss that neighbor, really. Actually, they're not that bad. And actually, I think I love them. I love all the neighbors. I mean, that mood sort of shifted after a while. But there was a moment when you actually felt this, I don't know about you, this huge love for mankind and humankind of, I miss you, I love you. And imagine that connection of feeling that with all of us. What a powerful thing that is.
That's so powerful, especially coming from a woman from London, because I know in London, people are very much in their ivory towers and right, like independent. And so that's huge coming from someone from London. But it's funny because I actually felt the same exact thing. And it's in one of my modules when we talk about the heart area.
Okay.
And I went from just being so bitter, especially towards anyone that seemed happy, especially anyone in their marriage. Like if I was out in public or, you know, on social media or at my church and seeing couples just seem relaxed in each other's presence and like it was easy, I was like, oh, like I hate them, you know, just so much pain, feeling so like I don't belong. And then going through, you know, this deep healing, I noticed myself walking down the street and just being like, oh, look, yeah, same stuff. Like my neighbor, I felt like Mr. Rogers. I don't know if you know what Mr. Rogers neighborhood is, but like another human, and this is beautiful. And
it's so important to realize that, you know, there is that famous quote, no man is an island. And never more so true than in these past few years where I was in the shop and, you know, because you couldn't go to the shop really. Well, you could, but there was all sorts of things going on at the time. But I remember bumping into a woman and she was an older lady. I said, I'm so sorry, because I hit her with the trolley and she actually gave me a hug. And it was such a beautiful moment. And she said, that's okay, because I touched her arm. And I said, I'm so sorry. And she said, you're the first person in about a year who's touched my arm. And I thought, I love you. You know, it was a case of, I think we were either open to love, or we were open to the reality of the beauty of other human beings. And that's something I think that we need to carry on. We have to carry on. And especially now, listening to you about your work and trying to help people in their relationships, it's so important to keep people together, not to separate them, but to bring them closer to one another. So carry on with this wonderful work, Becky, really. It's wonderful. It really is. When people try to bring people together in love and harmony, it's one of the most beautiful works.
Thank you, Mimi. And I want to keep you in my back pocket so I can listen to your voice anytime I need to calm my nerves.
Oh, how kind. Now, Becky, as we draw to a close, tell everybody out there where they can find out about your work, because I know you have a podcast and you have all these other wonderful things you do. Where is the best place to find out about everything that you do?
Yeah, the podcast is an amazing community. It'll be a year on April 1st. I know this will probably air after that passes, but we're just a couple days away from it being a year. And it's called Your Breakthrough Blueprint. It is in the top 5% of podcasts globally. And it's just been so fun and such an honor and has deposited so much education and hope and just relating into people's lives. So that is...
And what's it about? What is it? What's the... is it different guests?
Yeah, it's a mix of guests and solo episodes, and it's talking about breakthroughs in all areas, not just marriage. So breakthroughs in your health, your wealth, your parenting, your purpose, your spirituality, and more.
Excellent. And just remind the listeners, Becky, what's it called?
Your Breakthrough Blueprint.
Your Breakthrough. That's an interesting title. Where did that come from?
So when I think of all the different mainstream modalities and paths that I tried to find my breakthrough, it was all other people's blueprints they were handing to me, you know, like, mm-hmm. this worked for me, it'll work for you, do this, do that. And the catalyst that ended up really leading to my breakthrough and what I see in other people that I work with is it's their own unique blueprint that they're finding out, like, what's their unique nervous system, what's their unique constellation of trauma, what's their unique values and goals, and everybody's blueprint for success or breakthrough is going to look different based on their unique variables.
Actually, that's a fantastic line. That is so true. Mm-hmm. You know, what works for one person doesn't work for someone else, and what's important is to find out what works for you.
Yeah, 100%. So
100%.
Podcast.
I totally agree.
And then you can find me on Instagram, Becky_Oste. And I've got a free training called 3 Secrets to Thriving Intimacy that I can give you for the show notes.
Okay, brilliant. And what about your website?
Yeah, that's the same website, actually. My landing page / the free training is in the same link that I'll give you, where you can find the 3 Secrets training, as well as just information about me and the program that I run.
Wonderful. We'll put that in any case. So for everybody out there who's interested, we shall put a link at the end of the episode, and people can contact you. And do you do one-to-one?
I do have one spot available for one-to-one, and then my group program is always enrolling.
And what about people, for example, in London or, I don't know, Paris, who mm-hmm. would like to have sessions with you? Do you do international clients?
We do. We have clients in South Africa, in Australia, in Canada, United States. So we work with it. The time zones, I tell everyone, is way harder than all the complex trauma that I deal with every day. But we make it work.
I know, I'm always counting on my fingers and still getting it wrong a lot of the time. And somehow it's a number thing. I don't get it. So I always say to people, well, what time is it there now? And that's the only way that I can sort of relate to time zone differences. Otherwise, if you say to me 5 hours, I don't know, BST, or I don't know, I just don't get it. So I always say, well, what's the time there now? And then I can work it out.
Same. That's so funny. Yeah, it's a miracle that we got on at the right time.
Well, thank you so much, Becky. It's been an absolute pleasure to have you on and sharing your insights and your wisdom.
Thank you, Mimi, for having me.
Look after yourself and give my regards to the United States. And hopefully come back on again one day and tell us even more about your wonderful work.
That sounds great. Will do.
Take care. Bye.
Bye.
Bye. Becky Oste. Absolutely wonderful, really. And I am delighted and really honored that I have such wonderful guests and that I have such beautiful listeners. Thank you to all of you. Sincerely, it really means a lot to me that you share these precious moments with me and my guests. It makes life so much more worthwhile. Thank you, as always. Keep listening to your hearts and do something wonderfully beautiful. Until next time, lots of love and take care.
Thank you for listening to Secrets for an Inspirational Life, brought to you by your host, Mimi Novick. Please remember to subscribe to the podcast and see you in the next episode. For more information about Mimi Novick and her books, music, and inspirational work, take a look at her website, www.miminovick.co.uk.